Welcome to the post-Detroit Rapture Sharing Socks. I am Duty Geezer Lee Allen, and with me my son and West Coast correspondent Will. And we will probably wallow in the wonderfulness of beating the Tigers, even though many a high school team could do that, and get into what comes up next, which is a little bit rougher for the next week. If they come through the next week, well, then yay, things are good. Meanwhile, though, Will on Wednesday shot a movie scene. We can say the movie, right? It's
I think so.
Yeah, a movie called Unfrosted. It's a Netflix film. It's Jerry Seinfeld co-wrote, is producing, directing, co-starring in, and has this incredible cast of every comic you know of, stand-up or comic actor. And Will got to shoot a scene with all of these people on Wednesday. And two of the ones we knew were going to be in that scene are Chicagoans. No, I guess there were more Chicagoans, but two I knew were Chicagoans, Jim Gaffigan and Melissa McCarthy. And Jim Gaffigan, on one list, I went to celebrities, White Sox fans, and the first list I saw went Barack Obama, Michael Jordan, Jim Gaffigan. Yes! So I kiddingly said to Will, see if you can get Jim on the show. And then I looked up, and Melissa McCarthy actually shot part of a movie in the cell. 7 or 8 years ago. Her sister is a famous White Sox fan, Jenny McCarthy. I don't know if she is, or I didn't know, because she threw out first pitch for the Dodgers and stuff. Gaffigan threw out first pitch for the White Sox. So I said, get him on the show. So obviously you didn't really try to do that, but the Sox did come up. Yeah, it's a 13, 14 hour day. You're shooting one scene. There's a lot of off time. So it's time to shoot the bull. And you got to shoot the bull with a little bit with both Jim Gaffigan and Melissa McCarthy, which had to be really cool. And what happened with the White Sox end of it?
Well, some good and some bad. The first being with Gaffigan, he kind of denied being a White Sox fan. Now, he didn't fully deny it, but he did say that as a Northwest Indiana person, he actually didn't really have much skin in the game. He said that people get really intense about which team you follow once you're in Illinois, but they in Northwest Indiana, they tend to kind of be a little wishy-washy and go with whoever's good at the time. Now, it did sound like he's far more of a White Sox fan than a Cubs fan.
Thank God.
But, yeah, it wasn't clear. It certainly wasn't clear enough to put him third on a list behind Barack Obama and Michael Jordan. That being said, he was definitely pro White Sox. Melissa was more interesting because, as you mentioned before, she filmed that movie. And by the way, both of these people are very, very nice. She filmed this movie at the Cell, and they tried to get Wrigley for that movie. And because, you know, it's a movie. Wrigley looks good in movies.
Sure. Better than the Cell. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So she wanted to shoot it at Wrigley. She said the Cubs were just unbelievably unaccommodating and, you know, not helpful, not nice, not whatever. And, you know, if you're dealing with Melissa McCarthy, who is known for being one of the nicest people in the business, that's a bad move. And she said that, and I loved this, the White Sox greeted us with open arms. They rolled out the red carpet. They were so excited. We even wanted to be there. Everyone was so nice, and they had a great time shooting. And that, I was like, that is the difference between the two teams. That is all you need to know. That is the difference between those two organizations. It did turn out, though, that she is actually now a Phillies fan because of her husband. But her dad is from the south side of Chicago. So he remains a pretty loyal White Sox fan. And
well, she actually grew up in the city. She was born in Plainfield, but I think maybe she grew up in the city itself.
It sounded like it. I didn't dive that far into it, but her dad still lives on the south side of Chicago. So there's definitely fandom there. And she was very much more pro White Sox than Cubs, but did admit to being a Phillies fan, which I said did not line up with her personality at all. I was like, I can tell you right now without meeting any other Phillies fans that you are the nicest Phillies fan. But yeah, they were both great. They were fun to talk baseball with. Obviously, when you're in a room full of comedians, not a ton of people want to talk about baseball. So I chose wisely. But I will say another thing that was very cool is everyone loves Chicago so much. Like the moment they found out I was from Chicago, did the Chicago thing, everyone wants to talk to you about Chicago. They all love Chicago so much. Chicago being like the improv capital of the world. And when you're dealing with Melissa and Jim and Jack McBrayer, Bobby Moynihan, Thomas Lennon, those are improv gods. So it was very, very cool. I wish I'd gotten a little more Sox enthusiasm, but you take what you can get.
Well, I know you had a great day. When you called us on your way home, it's like you were 500 feet in the air about what an incredible day you had.
Yeah, I came home and, you know, you're in a huge movie scene and you're the only not super famous person in it, which is a weird experience. It's pretty crazy. And I just told Bryce, I was like, Bryce, my wife, for those who are listening, I said, you know, I'm not positive I'm alive right now. I was driving home thinking, what if I'm dead? What if I'm dead? And then I thought, you know, if this is how it is, this is awesome. So whatever. But yeah, so enough about that. Enough about that.
All right. White Sox destroyed the Tigers, which everybody pretty much is doing anymore. Tigers, I just saw something, I think in Fangraphs, are in line to be perhaps the worst hitting team ever or in the last 100 years.
They certainly look like it's a goal of theirs.
Yes, they're out to get that way. And while their pitching numbers are not bad, most of that was before they lost four of their five starting pitchers. They've only got one left and we didn't face them, Skubal. So they're, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they're going to beat anybody the rest of the year, but it was nice to get really good momentum like that going into what's going to be a very rough week. We're recording this Friday afternoon before the Houston series starts, going to Houston and then hosting Toronto. That's a little more of a challenge than Texas and Detroit. And if Sox can come through with this, I would say 3-3 is not bad. 4-2 would be terrific.
Well, I mean, so we're going to Houston, right? And then,
yes.
I'm sorry,
and
I didn't check. Home to Toronto. So, I mean, in my opinion, 3-3 in that scenario is great. You know,
I think so.
That's really all you need to do. You just really want to stay away from the 0-6 and 1-5. The 2-4 is not ideal, but if you can split on those two teams, especially with three of them being on the road in Houston, that's a great week if we have that week coming up. I can't say I feel confident we're going to have that week. But that being said, we did get some really good BP in this week against the Tigers.
Big hope, of course, the big surprise, which leads to a huge hope, was Yoan Moncada, who went 5-for-5 on Thursday. Yes, two of those were against 40-mile-an-hour pitches from position players. But the other three, homer, double, and single, all well hit. I mean, it wasn't, oh, look, a little one dropped in. The question has been, and we got to hope that he can continue with you on his spin, since he had COVID. And neither one of us knows a damn thing about medicine, but it kind of has – kind of looks to the layman like long-term COVID has entered or did enter into play here. He has had some good days, and they're usually followed by some bad days just because he doesn't have the strength. I mean, it's not a knock on your wand. It's just not there. So it'll be good to see if he can continue his activities the way they were on Thursday. That was marvelous. 5-for-5.
Yeah, I think actually ended up being 5-for-6. But either way, You know, I'm a huge Moncada guy, and I have been since we got him. Like, he has just been one of my favorite players. I spend so much time defending him. This year, it has been extremely hard to put up that argument. I know with my friend, my other Southside Sox buddies on our text thread, Bill Mahnke and Rob Colletti, you know, I even conceded last week that maybe this is it. Maybe this is it for Moncada. And maybe it's the COVID thing. Maybe it's a disinterest thing, preferring to be a pop star. That, of course, it's all speculation. We know nothing about what he's actually thinking and feeling. But yesterday was, and as you said, a couple of those at bats don't super count. However, when you are a guy who is just hitting nothing, even getting the EFIS pitches and doing something with them does matter, because getting dinky outs off EFIS pitches destroys your confidence more than anything else.
Did you watch the game? Do you have a chance to watch the game yesterday?
I did not get to watch it, no.
Fascinating thing. I worked it, so I had all kinds of attention to it, and you had to find special things to pay attention to once they were heading at 10 runs. When the position players came in, you know how on the scoreboard they now say, they don't just say 93 miles an hour or 89 miles an hour. They go four seam fastball slider. And they were caught. I don't know if they were just having fun or if the computer decided on it, but there'd be slider 47 miles an hour, curveball 46 miles an hour.
I mean,
I think they were probably just having fun.
to be fair, if you're throwing 47 miles an hour, that thing has a 12-6 drop on it. You know, as a
It
as currently as a high level slow pitch softball player, I can tell you we got no problem with that 12-6 drop. That is good. The slider is something I definitely question a little bit. You don't see a ton of movement from anything that's moving 47 miles per hour. But yeah, seeing Moncada unleash off of a couple, let's call them high AAA pitchers, was great. And I've kind of been saying for weeks that Yoan needs to go to Charlotte and he needs to work on the swing and get his confidence back up and try to get the oxygen pumping in those legs again. And fortunately for us, the Tigers brought their version of Charlotte to Detroit, and he got to have AAA baseball practice this week, and he made good use of it. I'm ecstatic that he showed some signs of life. Again, as we've said, tonight is a totally different ball game. It's a
Tonight, well,
totally
tonight will be interesting. The pitching matchups tonight is Framber Valdez against Lucas Giolito. Lucas has not been sharp recently. I mean, for Lucas, I mean, he's been fine as above average pitcher, but and it looks to me like it's the changeup that is the problem. It doesn't seem to be moving. People are able to lay off it. They're not being fooled by it as they have been for years. So we'll see how that goes. Valdez is having a very good year, but he's a lefty. And he does not have historical success against the White Sox at all, including giving up four runs in four plus in the playoffs last year. And then being a Houston win because he won 9-5. But he doesn't pitch well against White Sox historically. Now he's having a better year than any of his previous years. So it may be that he's just better. He's got a new pitch, his changeup better, whatever it may be. But that's an interesting matchup on Friday night. Saturday, an afternoon game. This is the one where you kind of go, well, if we win this one, then our whole season is back. Because it's Johnny Cueto, who's been fine, against Justin Verlander, who has been absolutely devastating. And then Sunday, Christian Javier, who's been very good, but not in the same vein as obviously it's Verlander, against unknown. And unknown is because they think Michael Kopech will be ready to go off his knee injury from a week ago, but he may not be. But I guess they're waiting till the last minute to see whether that'll work out. But that's an interesting series to have in Houston. Houston, you know, has a batting average now that the White Sox batting average went up 40 points or whatever it did the last 3, 4 or 5 days. They're at about the same level. I think they're one spot ahead of the Sox as far as batting average goes. Their pitching is, boy, their pitching is much, much better. They are the third best at not giving up runs, which is what it's all about, just behind the Dodgers and the Yankees. That's pretty tough company on the pitching side, even though their FIP is seventh. And the reason for that matchup, best defense in baseball.
Mm.
And the White Sox, of course, have the worst. So that's going to be something to watch, is how the fielding is. Now, they are missing Jake Myers, who was their outstanding center fielder. They are missing Jerome Pena, who took Carlos Correa's place and has been just brilliant at shortstop. So probably they have the advantage. I mean, we have the advantage on who's out on the injured list in the Houston series because of
which is almost never the case for
us. And they're also missing two starters, including a brilliant one, Lance McCullers Jr., and Jake Odorizzi, who's pretty good and have been having a good year.
Well, let's take a quick break right here, and then let's come back and keep talking about this, because I think we still need to talk about, one, the defense and our defensive woes. And we need to talk about, in my opinion, our still absolutely abysmal handling of starting pitchers. I hate to harp on this almost every week, but it just seems to get worse. And we did have our Lance Lynn debut over this past week as well. So we should talk about what it was like seeing Lance come back, but we'll do that.
It's not like before we break on this, because we're talking the Houston series, you notice Lance is not pitching. He would be scheduled to pitch Saturday or Sunday. He is not pitching. That's because he cannot get an Astro out to save his life. So this is, we got to give credit. I mean, we jump on the Hall of Fame baseball person enough. Give him credit for taking Lance out and putting him in on Monday against Toronto. Tough team, but not a team that he just absolutely gets devastated by every time.
And I will come back and argue with you about that right after this break. We'll be right back on Sharing Socks. Welcome back to Sharing Socks. We were talking about the Houston series. You mentioned right before the break that Lance Lynn is not going to pitch, even though he would have been scheduled to pitch. We saw him come out and throw 80-something pitches, I think, his first time out.
Yeah, not particularly well.
Not particularly well, but not so bad that it seems like
Lance
Lynn
hadn't been pitching all year.
Not going to be Lance Lynn. You, though, however, just made a grave mistake, which was crediting the Hall of Famer baseball person with anything. And in this scenario, you're crediting him with not throwing Lance Lynn against the Astros, who tend to feast on Lance Lynn. It could be that that's a great decision and that Tony, like, really finally did something right. Or it could be that they brought out a guy who hasn't pitched all year and made him throw 90 pitches his first time out, like lunatics, so that he can't throw well this quickly. I mean,
that's very possible.
What the heck were they doing having him throw that deep into the game? Well, not even deep into the game, because White Sox starters don't throw deep into games. They're always out by the fifth inning with 100.
Because they throw 25 pitches an inning.
And that's something I still want to talk about, because I do not think we can be a contender with the absolute lack of efficiency from our starters. And I realize that the game has changed and starters aren't necessarily expected to go the distance. They still talk about wanting to go the distance, but we don't have starters that comfortably get into the second half of a baseball game. I mean, we're supposed to have this great rotation. You know, Giolito's obviously not up to snuff. You mentioned before the changeup's not working. Well, if the changeup's not working, Giolito's not working. We also have Dylan Cease, who seems to throw 30 to 80 pitches an inning. Kopech has been sort of our most efficient, but also has made it to the seventh once. Maybe not even to the seventh, but made it through six, which at the time was the longest start of the season for the White Sox, which is just, I can't even wrap my head around it. And I argue with Bob, not with Bob, with Bill and Rob about this a lot. And I think it's a joke. And I even say I'm losing my faith in Ethan Katz because of this. They're very much on the train of fire everybody but Ethan Katz. And I would say that I'm still
I'm on
pretty
that same train.
I am also on that train, because obviously I think a lot of what Ethan Katz is doing is going to be derailed by the Hall of Famer baseball person. Ethan Katz isn't the one pulling guys out of games. He could be suggesting that these guys come out, or he could be saying, "Please, for the love of God, Tony, don't put Bennett Souza in this game." And Tony's going to do whatever the hell Tony wants to do. But at what point do we have to examine what Katz is not getting from these starters, which is any form of command that allows them to pitch deeper in games? And yes, we talk about the throwing motions and how they've improved the throwing motions and made these guys, a little sharper on the mound, in some cases a lot sharper on the mound. But is it actually a successful throwing motion if you have almost no command and have to leave the game after 4 innings? Is that to me is not a healthy, repeatable motion of any value whatsoever. And I get that they strike out a decent amount of guys in these 4 innings, but what good are you as a starter in professional baseball if we need to expect that you're going to be gone after 4 1/3? I mean, our starting pitchers, we're lucky if we ever get a quality start. It's absolutely insane how inefficient and commandless these pitchers are. What do you have any idea why this isn't improving at all as we get this far? Obviously, early in the season, you think, okay, you don't want to throw a guy more than 4 or 5 right away, especially with the shortened spring training. You want to be safer about that. But the issue also isn't innings, it's number of pitches. And it's not like we've been really conserving these guys at all in terms of number of pitches. They're just throwing 110 pitches in 4 innings, which is pathetic. I mean, it is absolutely pathetic. There should be an elite rotation. We're going to be going up against teams whose starters can go into the sixth and seventh. Well, our bullpen is not good enough to throw 5 innings every day for the rest of this season.
Going up against a starter on Saturday, you can go 12.
Exactly. And it's not overpowering, and he still strikes people out. Do you have any idea what the heck is going on that we just keep sending guys out there and every single
It
batter
just
goes to
seems
a
like
3-2
an
count?
amazing number, excuse me, of 3-2 counts. You get the feeling they're trying to pitch too fine. It's not that they don't have, I mean, there may be a given day when they don't have command, but most days they mostly have as good command as any other starting rotation is going to have. There'll be some exceptions there, but that most they're as good as anybody. But it's just like, well, we need to throw this one off the plate and that one off the plate. And the next thing you know, it's 3-2.
So who's
And
doing that? Who is the person who's saying like this one needs to be off the plate, this one needs to be off the plate, this, because it I would think the pitching coach would be like, throw more strikes. I mean, this whole 3-2 thing, as a former pitcher, I never wanted anyone ever to get to 3-2, because then they have the upper hand at 3-2, the batter does. So I don't understand how we're not throwing more pitches over the plate. And that's why I say lack of command. So is the issue that we are intentionally throwing everything off the plate, or is the issue that he wants these things on the corners and our guys can't hit the corners? Because these 3-2 counts, I mean, when you're throwing 20, 25 pitches every inning as a starter, I mean, that's not good baseball. That's not good pitching. I don't care if you strike out 14 guys in those first 4 innings. It's not good pitching. It's not good baseball. And they're also giving up runs in that time. So it's not even like, oh, well, they throw a lot of pitches, but they've got an ERA under 2, with the exception of Kopech, who has been throwing well, except he stepped on a pebble or something and got hurt like every other player on our team gets hurt these days. it's baffling to me. It's truly baffling to me that this is not something that people talk more about. It is truly, truly a pathetic rotation right now in terms of actually helping this team make it through a ball game and win. What's to be done? Let the record show, let the record show he shook his head and I don't know, as we say in
that
court.
is the record may show it. Speak to the microphone. Yes. No idea. That obviously we're exaggerating on the numbers, but not that much.
But we're not exaggerating by
They
that
were
much.
the least efficient staff, and we're talking efficiency, pitches per inning, of any starting staff in baseball last year, in the majors last year. I have not looked at the figures this year, but I would not be surprised to see it's the exact same situation. It just is. Why don't they just come at people? I mean, you've got Dylan Cease, who's got, as everybody in baseball will say, incredible stuff, and yet he'll come at people for a while, for a while, for a while, and then somebody gets a hit off a good pitch, and he gets shaken up, and then he doesn't come at him anymore. He's throwing off, usually off to his glove side. I don't know. Kopech, I think, has been great. He had
Kopech has
one
been
bad
great.
game, but that's going to happen. And Lucas, I think because the change is not breaking the way it has broken in the last years. I mean, and this is just an eyeball thing, but it doesn't seem to be breaking that much or that late or that quickly. He's just getting a lot of foul balls where he used to get swinging strikes.
Yeah.
And that extends at bats. You get a lot of foul balls, it just drags things out. Cueto is not an overpowering pitcher. I guess he never was, really, and he certainly isn't now. So he gets a lot of foul balls. They say he's been, if I got to give Rick Hahn credit for something this year that he did, it was picking up Johnny Cueto on the first day of the regular season. That was amazing. That he was
Yeah,
still
that
around.
was really smart, and I'm glad he did pick up Cueto because I do think Cueto is a valuable person to have on this team.
Lynn, of course, is just now back.
But
Let's
they
see what
already
happens.
overpitched him. He was already inefficient, and they already overpitched him. I mean, why did Lance Lynn throw more than 50 pitches? It makes no sense to me. The management of this team is embarrassing. It's pathetic. I am now an absolute firm believer that we cannot win in the playoffs with Tony La Russa. There is just no way. There's no way. All the off-the-field distractions aside, which I think actually don't matter as much because our players can keep their heads on, but I just don't see a world where any of this style of management pays off, which brings us to the next thing, which is one of the most laughable defenses you'll see. And as Bill and Rob pointed out, that does extend pitch count, total pitch counts quite a
Absolutely.
bit. It
All
does.
that should have been caught falls in.
But
Inning keeps going.
the other thing that's a problem is they're getting to 3-2. The guy is hitting the ball that should have been caught. And then on the next batter, they're going to 3-2. And then they're going to 3-2. And then they're going to 3-2. I mean, they're not helping themselves at all. It's so frustrating to watch this complete tomfoolery of coaching and management. I mean, this is a Major League Baseball team, and we sit and watch every ball that goes into play, wondering if anybody's going to catch it.
Well, we have somebody back who usually catches it, even though he had a horrible string earlier in the spring. Tim Anderson should be back next week. And as best I can figure out, nobody will go down because of that, or no position player will, because the deadline for cutting from 14 pitchers to 13 is Sunday. The announcers were talking some about it's going to get extended again, or they think it'll be, but there has been no indication from the commissioner's office that's going to happen. So we already have 13 position players. I mean, we have
Correct.
12. We
Yeah.
have 12 position players, and bring Tim back into 13. So a reliever will go down. Relievers go down and come back, just on a regular, frequent flyer basis.
And let's just give some love to this turnaround on. I know no one cares about batting averages anymore, but me. But I'm just gonna go from the top. Obviously, Tim's out, but he's hitting 356. We've got Vaughn up to 315 right now. We've got Mendick at 288, Robert at 283, Berger at 273, Jose Abreu at 272, Pollock at 262. It drops off after that, but honestly, Reese McGuire hitting 236 is a place that I'm fine with. Adam Engel he's a little disappointing thus far, but it's not necessarily that we expect him to hit that well. 226 feels a little low.
Yeah, he's the one that's been going backwards. Pollock's 236, for example. I mean, he was hitting 180 for a long time. So he's been hitting really well lately.
Those are numbers that, if your pitchers are efficient and your defense catches the ball, should make you an extremely hard team to beat. I mean, those averages are pretty sexy going down the line, that it took until the ninth batter for me to be disappointed in a batting average. That's very different from where we were 2 weeks ago. We're still absolutely abysmal in strikeouts to walks. You've got
Now, and that's then they're not striking out a lot. It's the walks thing.
no,
The
it's the
only
lack of
team
walks.
anywhere close to them, and they've been going back and forth depending on what happened to what team and what day, is the Tigers. And the
Right.
Tigers, as we discussed way back at the beginning, are the worst hitting team in the last 70 or 80 years.
We've got one guy who walks. That's Jose. He's got 42 strikeouts,
Well,
33 walks.
Grandal, when he's around.
Yeah, I'm talking about here's Grandal. Grandal's all the way down at 185. So yeah, he walks a lot too. He's at 45 strikeouts and 27 walks, which is certainly something you can live with. But Luis Robert, 38 strikeouts and only 8 walks. Jake Berger, 42 strikeouts, only 9 walks. You got Adam Engel at 39 strikeouts and only 8 walks. Pollock at
That's terrible.
37 and 8. I mean, that is, you, Lurie Garcia, I think, is the number one example of just being absolutely pathetic. Lurie is at 36 strikeouts and 2 walks.
And what's he hitting?
He is hitting 199. I mean, come on. How can you? That right there, hitting coach fired. You have to fire your hitting coach because our guys can swing the bat. They know how to swing the bat. They don't really even need the hitting coach to teach them how to swing the bat. They have no plate discipline whatsoever. And again, they're not striking out in an astronomical numbers, but they've certainly had more opportunities to walk than what those numbers represent. I mean, that is really
And
terrible.
that's even though Jose has been phenomenal. I forget what his ratio is. His ratio on 3-2 counts is like something, and these
Oh,
numbers will be
yeah.
wrong, but it's like 25 walks and 2 strikeouts on 3-2 counts. It's just incredible.
And actually, I think it's now higher on walks than that. And just like ticking one up on strikeouts. So that on 3-2 counts, that seemed better. He's at 33 walks and 42 strikeouts. I mean, that's a great ratio, especially for a big guy and a power hitter to have 42 and
Oh, it's
33. And
phenomenal.
none of those are going to be intentional, really, because not many people are pitching around Jose Abreu still. I mean, that's an incredible ratio. And he's one of the few guys that has 100 or more gap between batting average and on base percentage. And that's exactly why. And that is the kind of gap you should have. Your on base percentage should be significantly higher than your batting average. That is not the case for most of this team. That is the case for Jose. Also, obviously, the case for Grandal, because if you don't ever get hits, your on base percentage is going to be a lot higher if you walk. Which he does. But we are running out of time today. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we head into these big six games ahead of us this week?
Ah, it's going to be an interesting week. The schedule gets much easier after this week, but it's going to be a good week to see, show your mettle, as we say.
What's your prediction? What would be your prediction if you had to guess?
3-3.
3-3. I think we are also going to go 3-3. However, I think we are going to lose all three to Houston because their starters can go so much farther into games than ours. And then I think we'll beat Toronto for all three at home as a sort of making up for the humiliation we faced in Houston. But until our starters can get it together and our coaching staff can do something positive, I'm not even sure we're going to squeak out that 3-3. But let's hope we do. Let's stay positive. This last week was a very good week for us against terrible teams. Well, not very good. The Texas stuff.
The Texas series was not good.
The Texas stuff was almost as bad as it gets. We pulled out one win against them, but those extra inning losses were absolutely disastrous. But then we made up for it with some batting practice against Detroit. It's easy to feel good right now when you come off a series against Detroit. And thankfully, we do feel good coming off a series against Detroit because if we didn't, this is all over for this year. But yeah, so we'll send the good vibes out. Let's hope we can at least split these six. And in the dream world, we come back on this podcast next week. We knocked them all out, 6-0. It's not going to happen, but I also didn't think I'd be in a movie with Jerry Seinfeld this week, and that went down. So thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week on Sharing Socks.